Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning again, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. I'm Frankenberry, and we are back with another show, and it's going to be another, gangbusters, right? It's just going to be a big, big show, right? Show.
Well, we got Pink in the house.
Well, we do. We've got Pink in the house. Yeah, Jonna's latest, Jonna's latest alias via Zoom is Pink.
But let me tell you why. Okay, so you guys know that I come on when we do this through the computer and I give myself a different alias every week. Now, this week, I've got no special affinity to Pink. It's not like I have a message. It's not like I was singing one of her songs. I just wanted to be somebody who spelled her name with an exclamation point. And she was the only one I could think of.
She's the only one that I can think of as well. Unless, of course, it's an exclamation point at the end of a name of some famous person who's being yelled at.
No, but that doesn't count.
Okay, so
the exclamation point has to come somewhere in the middle, which is way more exciting than having like a name that's spelled with maybe an ampersand, you know,
or
pound sign.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like they're a dime a dozen, as far as I can tell.
I've seen millions.
Millions.
So, that's why. Guys, before we begin chatting, can I just ask? I think I know the answer, but have you been following the Johnny Depp trial at all?
As little as possible.
And I am with Carol, except less than that.
So you two are both. You mean Frankenberry's knocked on Carol's bubble world door and has entered? You two are lunching there.
There's not a day on Facebook that I can't scroll and there's something there. And I think maybe once I hit on a video, but it's, I don't know. Why? Why do you ask?
Yes, why?
I'm only bringing it up because I've basically been having to study it so I can comment on it. And I will say this, it is actually fascinating. It's just fascinating in a train wrecky way. It's fascinating from watching these different lawyers and their styles. I mean, it's really, I know that people are saying, like, who gives a crap about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard? But, you know, he has so many penthouses that he had to number them and people can't really relate, and I get it. But just in terms of, if you want to look at relationships, right? This is a perfect example of it don't matter how much money, fame, fortune, help you have, that if you two people aren't meant to be together, you're going to repel each other like oil and water, because these two, holy.
Toxic. Absolutely toxic. Yeah.
Totally. I don't know if I've ever witnessed a more toxic union.
And so you've been following it because you have to, because of your career, and you are interested. And I can see that, how from a legal process standpoint and skill and knowledge and what they're doing from the legal aspect of things, that would be interesting to you. But is it really just a combination of two people who are toxic together? Like, they both contributed to the mess they're now in, yes? Or is she more a whack job than him?
No, I think they both were, if you dissect the case, for example, like Johnny Depp had a lot of, and maybe he still does, I don't know, drug and alcohol problems, which can make any relationship toxic. And I don't mean that to be critical, because those things are certainly fixable. And a lot of people have had substance abuse problems, but she, I think, made it worse. Like there's no excuse for a person ever to walk around in their life taking embarrassing photos of the person that they're supposed to be in love with. Like, even if you're trying to fix somebody, taking pictures of them passed out with ice cream melting in their crotch, or, you know, some sort of evidence of whatever argument they just had. Like, there comes a point in time when you are not collecting evidence, but you are concocting it. And that can really, I don't think that's helpful in any circumstance. That's all I'm going to say about that. But it really is fascinating. Like, holy cow.
What a massive, like, this is just the opposite of, I think, how I would handle it if I were in, and I guess I wouldn't find myself in this situation, but what a massive investment of your time, energy, aggravation, frustration. Like, don't you want to just find peace and be happy again? And you're going to find that suing somebody and going through a public trial? Really?
Yeah, I know. For years and millions of dollars. And it's just, and I guess maybe that's really the takeaway, is I don't care how rich or how poor, we all deserve to be happy. And when you're in this kind of toxic situation and you can't get better, then get out. Like, get out.
Yeah, definitely.
It's really the takeaway. But when I'm not watching the trial, so I've started watching a couple of shows on television that are new to me with my much younger paramour, as you guys know, is in my life. And I want to ask you something. Have you ever been compared to an actor or an actress? Like, has anybody ever said to you guys, like, oh, Frankenberry, you look like the actor so-and-so. Or Carol, you know what? You remind me of the actress in, and only to be insulted because the actor or actress you're being compared to, you find completely freaking homely. Has that ever happened to either one of you before?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Hang on. And it was after I left my ex. I was sporting some big, like, wide glasses, which it was either Diane Cannon?
Keaton, probably.
Keaton. Wait. Diane Keaton.
She
and I don't find her homely, but I
no,
didn't find
her
a compliment.
But those were because of your glasses.
I guess. But this was still over 20 years ago.
Why? Yeah. I got nobody.
Nobody's ever compared you to anybody, Frankenberry, on the big screen.
I don't know. Maybe somebody said I was kind of like John Cusack once, but that's probably about only because we were, you know, the idiot that he was in the movies, I was that idiot in real life. So, you know, we don't look anything alike, but, you know, I could have been John Cusack and Better Off Dead.
Oh, so maybe it was more of a personality.
Yes, yes. More the character being played. Yes.
Gotcha. And
so why do you ask, Miss Spielberg?
Who did you get compared to there, Jonna?
It's happened to me twice now. Once years ago when I was in a, this is how long ago, you guys, I was in a grocery store. So.
Oh, my God.
That had to be like another lifetime.
You sure it wasn't a Five and Dime or a general store?
No, I'm positive. It was a real life grocery store. And I actually remember I was like, I think I was near the potatoes for some reason, because when somebody insults you the way I was insulted, you don't forget where you were in that moment. And somebody had come up to me and asked if I was Melissa Rivers, right? Is that her name? Joan Rivers' kid.
Oh,
okay.
Right? That's your name, Melissa?
Yes.
I think so.
Is that when you were sporting curly hair?
No. Actually, I was doing the straight thing, but that's not. So that was years ago. And I remember like, oh my God, like she just compared me to somebody who I don't find the least attractive. But now more recently, and by more recently, I mean like last night, years and years ago, I remember I was watching a movie and there, I'm not going to name the name of the star just yet. And there was a female actress in it. And I remember saying to myself then, and look, I don't like to talk about people's looks. I think you can find beauty in everybody. And I think even the most beautiful people can be ugly depending on their actions. So I don't really comment on that. But years ago, saw this actress and I'm like, ah, she's one homely woman. And I'm embarrassed that I thought that, but I did. Okay, so anyway, so fast forward a million years, I never really followed this actress's career. And she really, I don't think has been in a whole lot, but she is famous. And now she's in a new show. Should I tell you the name of the show? Because then you might figure it out. I guess I could.
Well, okay. You're going to have to tell us who it is.
Okay, so I've been watching Lincoln Lawyer, and who stars a very, I don't even know his name either, very handsome guy who plays the Lincoln Lawyer. And one of his ex-wives happens to be this actress that years ago I commented and said, whoa, how homely. Well, the other night, sitting there watching the show with my much younger paramour, and he goes, oh, you know what? She reminds me of you. And I said, which one? And he's like, And I was like, we have to break up now because you must think I'm ugly, because that's what I think of that actress.
Well, I'm looking at the cast right now online, and I'm not seeing anybody that I would say looks like you. But is Marissa Tomei in it?
No, I would not have been insulted by that at all.
But is that the show we're talking about?
No, so it's a TV series.
Oh, this is a movie.
Yeah, you're looking at the Matthew McConaughey movie. No, this is a brand new series.
Yeah, don't go to the movie. This is an offshoot of that.
All right.
Are you looking at that cast?
Yep, now I am.
All right, so
okay. I don't think you look like any of them.
Right, I mean, and as long as he didn't say that you look like this Angus Sampson fella, I think you're in good shape.
Is that the star? Is Angus Sampson the star?
No, that's Manuel Garcia Rolfo.
Oh, yeah. Is it Nev Campbell?
Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, one, I think she's beautiful. Two, I don't see the resemblance.
Yeah, I'm with you on both there, Carol.
She's beautiful.
Hang on. Okay, so hang on. She's beautiful, and you don't see the resemblance. Thank you.
Because, Jonna, you're beautiful in a completely different way. We know you from the inside, Jonna.
She can do that. She can say that because she knows there's probably 150 times I've told her on air how gorgeous she is. So she just couldn't resist. That was like a little lob I hit over the net for you. So
that was pretty good. I just don't find her attractive at all. So if somebody says to you that you remind them of somebody who you don't feel is attractive at all.
Take Nev Campbell. I got Diane Keaton. So,
because of your glasses.
Yeah, but Diane Keaton's a great actress, though. So I would take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let someone call you Diane Keaton.
Well, that's a completely different story, don't you think?
Well, I would say this. I think Diane Keaton is pretty. I don't like her sense of fashion. So if somebody referred to me as Diane Keaton, I'd probably kick him in the shins too, because I don't like the clothes that she wears. If we're going to be superficial. But who's going to be superficial?
Oh, well, Lord knows we can't be.
But, you know, actually, my much younger paramour, I think, has seen people on TV and has said, that person reminds me of Carol. I can't think of who, but nobody, like, completely insulting. He does that with a lot of my friends.
Okay. All right. Well, next time you'll have to let me know. So he tells you look like somebody you used to think is homely.
Yeah.
And so you broke up with him. Are you now available? Oh,
I was wondering.
Yes.
How she was
done. Yes.
It could be one of the best ones.
Yes. You know what, Carol? It's one of two things. That one is either epic or it is just completely shameless.
You both are going to applaud right now. You can applaud. I'll wait. Go ahead, clap. Yep.
All right. What Curly Teske is referring to is our upcoming guest today on Happy Hour is the author of the aptly named memoir, Available. Coming up after the break, we're going to be speaking with first-time author, by the way, Laura Friedman Williams. She penned, and I'll gloat when we speak with her, but she penned a book following basically the dissolution of her marriage entitled Available, a memoir of sex and dating after a marriage ends. And it is raw, it is real, it is funny. It's all of those things. So when we come back from the break, we're going to be speaking to Laura Friedman Williams all about her book, Available.
All right. That sounds good. For Nev Campbell and Carol Pesci, I'm Frankenberry, and we will be right back with our guest this morning. So please stick around.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
All right, and welcome back to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci and myself. And it's time now in segment number two, as always, to get to our latest esteemed guest. And we have Laura with us today, Laura Williams. And Jonna, how about you tell us a little bit about our new friend?
So yes, and you know what? That is the key phrase. Laura Friedman Williams is going to be my and Carol's new BFF. You're going to find out why very shortly. But let me tell you a little bit about Laura Friedman Williams. She is the author of a new book, and We're going to talk about this in a second, but I absolutely fell in love with the cover of the book. I'll tell you why in a minute. But she has written a book entitled Available, a memoir of sex and dating after marriage ends. There's going to be a lot of ladies among the 13 listeners that we have who are going to really want to dig in to this book. But Laura is I'll tell you a little bit about her. She's a native New Yorker who's writing, I love this intro, whose writing credits consist of countless PTA newsletters and program notes for talent shows and school auctions, as well as some ghost-written bar mitzvah speeches for many of her friends. Her wit and wisdom have not yet made it to a larger audience, but her years spent raising children and running events at her children's school have kept her writing steady and sharp. She credits her degree in English from Washington University and the 10 formative years she spent in book publishing for giving her a deep love and respect for the written words. And like our esteemed co-host Carol, she credits the breakup of her marriage for finally giving her the subject matter about which she both needed and wanted to write. She lives in downtown Manhattan with her three children. Welcome to the show, our new BFF, Laura Friedman Williams.
Hello, thank you so much. What a lovely introduction.
So, Laura, okay, let me just tell you a little bit about why you are here. Number one, you were written up, the New York Post did an article about you and the subject matter that they wrote about, that you write about, sex and dating after marriage ends. And so many, I'm interested in that, not just because I do a lot of divorces in my practice, I'm an attorney by day, but so many people, in fact, I'm going to say all of my female clients have questions and are interested in this subject matter. Mm-hmm. All my female divorce clients are. But then I took a look at the cover of your book and I was at once like intrigued and chuckled. So for people, this is radio, so I'll have to give it a description, but we'll post it on social media. So the cover of your book has the word available across a peach. Which I have to know, and the definition of available underneath that peach. Now, when we text, peach is historically the emoji for a butt. Is it not? Okay.
No, it is.
Was that your intention? Was that your intention with the cover of this book? Because if it was, I just find it hilarious.
Well, the funny thing is that the conversations I had to have with my editor and with the whole team, which was originally in England at the publisher there, about this peach were hilarious because I said, it looks like I'm inviting somebody to have a certain kind of sex with me. Yep. And they said, well, it's just we get it, but it is the most sexy fruit that we can find that relates to a woman. And so we spent hours actually online looking up images of sexy fruit. And found all kinds of things ranging from some looked really vile, like the inside of a papaya looks like a pulverized inside of a woman. And then other ones, like I thought there were some very sexy grapefruits, some sexy strawberries, but my publisher, they were dedicated to this peach. They loved this peach. So, I said, they know what they're doing. They're a global publisher. Let them have their peach.
Hey, Laura, I want to let you know, by the way, I would be partial to the strawberry because I am Frankenberry after all.
Well, also, a fun fact about the book is that originally the cover was a giant eggplant. So the cover was purple. It was a pale purple cover with a giant eggplant. And I was horrified. And I said, you can't do this. This is so, it's so obvious, but also I'm a woman. This is all about my sexuality. Right. How could we put, but they loved the picture and they were totally dedicated to it. And finally, again, because I'm pretty, I always sort of acquiesce to people who I think know more. I was like, all right, if you guys like it that much, knock yourselves out. And then the best thing in the world happened, which was a friend sent me an image of another book called Available with an eggplant on the cover. Oh! And that was the end of the eggplant. It was, it was kismet.
Right. Not to be confused with Frankenberry's upcoming book based on our previous discussion off the air, which will be entitled Plum Smugglers. And we know which group will be on that, won't we?
There are some sexy plums. I think you'll be happy with the plums that you can find.
I'm looking forward to spending hours Googling images of plums now. Thank you. Good. And speed
up.
I'll do it for you. I'll do it for you.
Okay, thanks.
Plums in Crowded Spaces. That's a much better title.
That's a good one.
Yeah, sorry.
So I have to confess, I started, I listened to all my books, Laura. I don't read anymore because I you know, like to enjoy my books, like when I'm going for a walk or what have you. And I am more than halfway through the audio version of your book, and I absolutely can't get enough. So can you tell, why don't you tell our audience, for those who don't know, what inspired you to write this book? Tell us about your backstory, how you got here.
Well, I always enjoyed writing, but I really put my career in publishing. I love to read also. I put my career in publishing on the back burner, and then it kept going, that back burner, for like 20 years while I was married to my college sweetheart and raising three children in Manhattan. And I really just threw myself completely into mothering and into being a wife and into those roles. And when I was 47, which was 4 years ago, I found out that my husband was having an affair. It came as the greatest shock of my life. And I couldn't take him back. I just couldn't do it. So we split up immediately. And after, you know, a period of time, I started to wonder what life was like as a single woman at 47. The last time I'd been single, I was 20. And so I went out one night and I had this really earth-shattering, eye-opening one-night stand that made me realize that my life going forward could be completely different than what it had been. And I started on this journey. I didn't intend to go on a journey. It just sort of happened that way of having lots of dates, having lots of sex with lots of men, and kind of finding myself in the process. And I wanted to share my story in part because I was the least likely candidate to take this path. There was nobody who would have seen this coming for me. I was very content in my life. And I loved being a mom and a stay-at-home mom. I was the PTA president. I mean, I was the head of the bake sales and the talent shows. I was really in it. And this was not a path that anybody would have expected for me. And I just thought, we really don't know what is inside of us until it's unleashed. And I wanted to share that.
Wow. See, and I love this because and I'll admit this, you are, and your book is a little bit of a departure from what we normally do on this show. Normally we have these like very self-helpy how-to authors on the book, but I am finding that your book is going to be immensely helpful for a lot of people. And one reason for that is for what you just said, like you went from being this totally content mom, wife of, you know, 27 years to all of a sudden finding yourself almost suddenly single. And what you did, you know, some people might look at you and go, well, you know, she had a lot of sex and dating after marriage. But I think that took courage. It not only took courage to take that first step, I think a lot of women are afraid to do that. So, I mean, there had to be something that went through your mind. How did you gain the courage in that position, only having been really with one man, with your three kids? How did you find the courage to find yourself, basically? Because that's what I see this book as being about.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think that part of it is that I was so scared that I felt so depleted. I felt so unlike myself. I felt the 6 months since I'd found out about my husband's affair and my family was shattered. I felt that my whole, even up to the age of 20, when I met my husband, my whole goal had been find a husband, have children. I just wanted the family. You know, a career would have been nice, but I mostly just wanted the family. So it was like a complete recalibration of anything I had ever known. And I was so scared that I was just going to be dead inside from that moment forward. So to me, like sitting there facing the two paths I could take, one, get out of the house, go sit at a bar, see what it's like to be out in the world again, see if anybody even sees you. You feel invisible. You might be. So find out if you really are. Either do that or stay home. And then accept the fact that your life is over. And I was just too scared to do that. I was not ready to say, I'm done. I'm throwing in the towel. So it was really fear motivated me out of the house. So people say you were very brave. A lot of people say this to me and I say, well, I don't really know if it was bravery. It was terror. You know, you have a plan for your life. Your whole life is, and it goes up in smokes. And you think, I guess I didn't really understand what I was meant to do anyway. So I may as well do something else.
Wow. That's interesting. Carol has a similar story. And don't you think, Carol, like the moment that you found out that your husband at the time had been, I guess you want to say you fell in love with somebody else. I mean, that completely altered your future. Don't you agree?
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities here with what Laura is explaining, because I had that, I guess I call it the white picket vision, right? Like, I had always grown up being a dedicated type of person, not loyal, dedicated to my friends. Even when I was dating younger, I was never one to jump around. I didn't need a piece of paper that said I was married to be faithful. That's just how I am. And I envisioned being married one time and forever. And I did put a lot of time and energy and focus into taking that role seriously and being a good wife. So when I walked up behind my ex and heard him telling somebody else on the phone that he loved her, yeah, I feel you, Laura. I was absolutely crushed, and it's like your entire identity becomes in question, and your world is turned upside down. And I went through all the normal stuff, which I'm sure you did, the anger, the fear, all of that, until I was like, okay, well, what do I want now? And that's kind of what you did. And then we both.
It's exactly the same. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that, and that feeling of, I think the loss of identity is one of the things I talk about the most, is if I'm not who I always was.
Right.
And that was my most important identity, was as a wife and mother. And like you, my relationships had always, every boyfriend I'd had before my husband, there were only two boyfriends. It was long term. I was always ready to like settle down. And if I'm not a wife and mother anymore, who am I? I felt like I was nothing. I felt like an empty vessel. And but I wasn't. And that was the thing, is that I gave myself the space, as it sounds like you did, to find out who was inside, besides the identities that I felt in many ways had been suppressed all those years.
Yeah. And I found that my biggest lesson, and what has led to, and the life I live now, and you may agree and say the same thing. Can't believe I would say it, but I would go through it all again to be where I am. And at the time, it was the end of my world as I knew it. Mm-hmm. Best thing that's ever happened to me.
And 100%.
Yep. And the key was, one of the first keys for me, number one, I didn't invest in hurting him back and causing him pain and creating more resistance. That wasn't going to get me to a better place. And that's what I wanted. Mm-hmm. But I went from the why me, what did I do wrong, what should I have done differently, that internalizing, which, you know what the answers you get when you ask those questions, all the stuff that keeps you stuck, until I started saying, okay, well, what now? What do I want? I want to be happy again. And what does that look like for me? And to start asking those questions and start moving toward it. And I think one big takeaway for anybody listening right now, if you are in a major change of your life and it involves the ending of a relationship, is to feel your feels. You got to do that. But to know, and we're two examples of that, that our worlds exploded in a wonderful way in the aftermath.
I agree with that completely. I think the grief is like losing a person to death. I mean, the person that my husband was dead to me. He still exists in the world, but not in any way that is the same as he was in my life before. So people, I think it's very hard to understand when you haven't been through it, that when you're going through the initial stages of a separation or divorce, you really feel like you're grieving the death of somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And I grieved hard. And I thought there would be, no matter what, I was not going to end up the same person. I just kind of assumed that I'd end up a lesser person. But like you, I feel like even though the grief was the worst thing I ever went through, and I'm not sure I'll ever be totally over it, to be honest with you. I think there is a part, the PTSD is real, you know, finding out that your husband is in love with another woman when you think that when you're living the happiest family life that you can conjure. You know, I don't know that ever goes away, but at the same time, I feel the exact same way. I would not go back. I would not go back to what I had. I feel like I'm living a much richer and more authentic life on my own terms. And I would not have thought that for the 6 months in which you could barely pick me up off the bathroom floor. It's kind of amazing what a few years can do. And like you said about feeling the feels, you have to just go through it. You know, the mantra I said to myself constantly was, the only way out is through. I said that to myself 100 times a day, because I thought, I'm in it right now. I'm in the thick of it, but there has to be a way out. And I had faith that there would be, and there will be if you allow it.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Laura, you had a sort of an additional, or three additional hurdles to get through though, because when this was happening to you, you still do, you have three children who it seemed like maybe because your kids were two of them were slightly older, like they figured it out. It wasn't like you kind of had a, they sort of figured it out. And then you had to manage your life and theirs, and to a certain extent, they weren't too happy with their dad after realizing this. And a lot of my clients often wonder, like, how much should you share with your kids when you're going through a divorce, whether infidelity is involved or not? Can you talk to us a little bit about that? Was it really not a choice because your kids were in tune to what was going on?
Well, it wasn't a choice, but also I had already determined in the days that I knew before I told them that we had separated. I had already determined, I'm not going to lie, right? Like, this big lie just blew my family up. I'm not going to continue it. And I grew up in a house with a lot of family secrets, and I know how much those family secrets can cause pain down the road. So I thought, like, we're going to rip this Band-Aid off now. It's all going to be on the table. That being said, I'm not going to vilify him. So I wanted my kids to still have a father. That was very important to me. So the older kids, they were about 14 and 17 at the time, and they were onto it before I was, which is tragic on its own level. And hurts me deeply. They had already sort of like put two and two together, and I was just living in my own little la la land. The little one was like seven. She was only seven. So we didn't tell her, but there was no keeping it from them. They figured it out immediately. There was no reason for us to separate except for this like cataclysmic event. So they were furious. I mean, they unleashed fury onto him. Like, I don't know how he's still standing. And That went on for a long time. And in fact, my son, who had been very close to his father and really quite like, his really like the light of my husband's life, stopped speaking to him for almost a year. And so, you know, you're talking about a 14, and then he turned 15 during this. My older daughter turned 18. Neither of them was speaking to their father. The seven-year-old didn't understand. Like, we'd always been this really close family. And now she's like, wait, when I see dad alone. Nobody else comes. Nobody else is part of our family. This is not part of our family. We have birthday parties and dad's not there. And we couldn't explain it to her except to say, you know, dad and I are having a hard time right now. So it was hard for everybody on different levels. And I think parenting them through it was brutal because they felt they owned the grief. And sometimes I had to say, I'm upset too. Like, this didn't just happen to you. This happened to me, but they wanted me to fix it. And what happened that surprised me unpleasantly was that within a few months, they felt like, okay, you know what, mom, this is on you now. Because dad would come back and you could take him back. So now the only thing stopping us from being the family we were is actually you. So now we're mad at you. And that for me was tragic. I've always been so close to my kids to have them feel that I was the cause. I mean, the guilt was unbearable, but I couldn't take him back. I knew it. And I kept thinking, if I take him back, I'm going to be miserable. And what am I modeling for my kids? Yep. How do I model that? You know, there has to be something more I can show them. I have to be able to show them resilience and a true path to love, even if it hurts everybody right now. So we just forged ahead. We kept going. It was bumpy. There were lots of tears. There were lots of crying. And eventually by the end of the year, you know, my husband and son were speaking again a little bit, and they were working their way back toward a relationship. The same with my older daughter. And just last year when my youngest was 10, right before my book came out, I asked my husband to tell her about the affair because I felt that it was going to be something she was going to hear about at some point, and I wanted to make sure it came from us. And so he told her, and it was okay. You know, our family line is like, this happened. It revealed a lot of fault lines in our marriage. It really hurt. This is not the way he should have done it, but we're all better off for it.
You know, we should also mention that it's not like you threw in the proverbial towel, because in the book, you actually talk about, you did some therapy, and one of the things, and I don't know if you intended this part to be funny, but it was in a warm and endearing way. But I'm basically right past the part of the book where you guys were getting therapy. And at one point, your husband said to you and the therapist words to the effect of that he defended this other woman. You know, he said, you know, she's not a bad person or something like that. And then the therapist had said maybe something flippant to him, like, hey, you know, you shouldn't really defend her. And I viscerally sort of empathetically felt what you must have felt listening to your husband say that. And then even though I'm listening to the book, I'm not physically turning pages. It was as if I turned a page and the next thing you said was, so I got a new therapist. I cracked up, and I don't know if you meant it to be funny, but I was like, I love this woman. That's, you're like, you know what?
She's not doing it for us. That's so funny. I love it. I didn't mean it to be funny. It is funny when you say it like that. I was never a huge fan. You know, there was nothing careless or easy about making the decision to end my marriage. So when I, you know, when we went, I agreed to go to therapy because, I didn't know what to do. We were just reeling. But the therapist that we went to, the very first session we had with her, she said, you know, we're not going to create a villain and a victim here. Because if we do, we're not going to get anywhere. And I said, but mm-hmm. can we do it like for a couple of sessions? Because I am the victim, you know?
Right.
And she was like, Laura, if you need to be right, then you're never going to get anywhere. And I said, but I just need to be right now. Like, I think I can get past this, but I don't think I can be past this if nobody can even acknowledge that it was wrong to begin with. I need an apology. Like, this is very basic. And wow. I didn't get it. And I think I I don't want to blame anybody. Like, there's a million reasons and a million things that happened, and marriages are complicated. But I really believe that if we had gone to the second therapist first, we could have ended up differently. I think that she would not let me be upset. She was, and she cost so much money. She was so expensive. She was like a very, you know, top-notch couples therapist. And she just was immediately like, Laura, you're not the victim here. You participated. You know, and so I was like, oh my God, this is my fault. I'm actually to blame for his having an affair. And I felt that way for a long time, that it was my fault.
Which is the other way the pendulum swings and probably should not have. I wish we had more time with you. I just want to also mention that this is sort of a small world story, because you talk about, you live in Manhattan, but you also had a house in the Hudson Valley that your families would go to and from. And I'm saying to myself, oh my, as I'm listening to the book, I'm like, oh my God, I wonder, did she ever have a consultation with me? And like flipping through my things. But I also want to say that even though the book is really therapeutic and I love the way you chronicle your journey, it also reads, it's sexy. So if somebody's in the position or they're just not in the position, you just want a really good, fun read, raw and real. Available is just it. I love it. It's a wonderful memoir. I mean, it just really, really is.
Thank you. I so appreciate that. And that was really my goal, was just to tell it like it is: the good, the bad, the ugly, the sad parts, the happy parts. It's life, right? Like, I get that now. You can be on the floor crying 1 minute and having the best sex of your life an hour later. It's possible. And I wanted to show that it was possible, and that doesn't mean you won't go back to crying on the floor the next day. It's just that's how it goes. That's how recovery is.
Wow.
Exactly. Yep. And you do it brilliantly. Excuse me. And your writing is so fun. And I really found, a lot of heartwarming humor throughout the book. And I'm not done yet. And I can't wait to finish it. So we've been speaking
thank
with
you.
Is this your first book, Laura?
Yeah, it's my first book.
Well, I love that. So we've been speaking with first-time official author, Laura Friedman-Williams, author of Available, a memoir of sex and dating after a marriage ends. It's really a wonderful read. And there's so many parallels. That's why I said you're going to be our new BFF. And we've really enjoyed speaking with you. And best
you.
Of luck. And we're going to, we hope that anybody in the position will pick up the book, because it's a different look on how you can get through divorce and, those types of relationship breakups that can really level us. So we really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate you guys too.
Yes, thank you very much, Laura.
On everything, Laura.
Thank you.
Yeah, seems to be going well for you right now. So I'm glad it's worked out to get to this point. So thank you so much for joining us this morning here, Laura. We appreciate it, and we will return. We're not done with Happy Hour just yet, so we've still got more to come with Jonna Spielbore and Carol Pesci and myself. So please stick around. We'll be right back.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM.
And welcome back one more time to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spielbore, Carol Pesci, and myself. Never to be confused with Bradley Cooper. Nobody has ever said that I look like him. though I did have one person say that Rocket Raccoon reminded them of me. But anyway, we are back. And thanks to Laura for joining us this morning, our guest. She was wonderful.
Oh, my God. No, What? She's going to be our new BFF. We're going to have drinks with her.
Stop. Stop. Hold the phone. Everybody stop right now.
What
this
happened?
Is segment 3, right?
Yeah. Holy crap!
All right. Do it. God. Do it now, Frankenberry. We still got time.
Oh, my God. Oh, how did I forget that? God. Okay.
Oh, dear Lord.
With Jonna Spillbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Yes. Hello, Frankenberry.
Hello, Frankenberry.
Well, that was a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah, 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 that was my bad. I sucked the air right out of that.
Wow.
My bad.
Wow. Wow. I can't, you know what? I can't even go on right now. I don't know. You know?
A little distracted this week. My apologies.
Oh, you're distracted now.
Well, yeah, it's a busy day.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's right. You did tell us about that beforehand. But that's still no excuse, you know? No, there's certain things you just don't do. You don't leave the house with dirty underwear, and you don't come back to segment three without saying, hello, lady.
All right. Duly noted, Mom. Thanks.
We course corrected. So
we did.
Anyway, that interview went so fast with Laura. I really wanted to get into more of the juicy stuff, but the topic is important for anybody that's going through a breakup or still trying to find themselves again, to say, boy, they're definitely not only hope to recover, but hope to live even better than before.
And she shows you that you can live your life while you're going through it. And I just, there's so many, I see it in my practice, so many people kind of stop that. They stop living while they're going through their divorce, and you can do both simultaneously. She shows you how. The book is really fun, well written. I encourage everybody to pick up Available by Laura Friedman Williams. And on that note.
Yes, I think we will close up shop on that note. And again, Laura Friedman Williams, thank you very much for joining us today. For Jonna Spillbore, a.k.a. Pink. And for Carol Pesci, I'm Frankenberry, and please join us again next week. We'll be doing the same thing, same time, with Happy Hour. Until then, have a good and a safe.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spillbore and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.